Welcome to Get Over It, the Consciousness Transforming Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We have got a very exciting show today. We're going to be speaking with Ellen Everett Hopman about her book, The Sacred Herbs of Spring, Magical Healing and Edible Plants to Celebrate Beltane. And if you don't know, folks, Beltane is May 1st, so we're going to dive into that. But she's got a lot of information to share with you. She packed, I think, like 9 encyclopedias into this book, and she even has color photos. If you're into herbs and fairies and druids and all of that, this is going to be your show. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you shift your consciousness to break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you let go of the BS that is holding you back. But guys, you know I always ask the question, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience supporting people to break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing cutting-edge intuitive information that enables you to prosper and thrive. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I also authored 2 books. I provide consultations and healings in all areas of life that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to your absolute fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. Now, to find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, and that's MoniqueChapman.com, and I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. My guest today, Ellen Everett Hopman, is an author, master herbalist, and druid priestess. A professional member of the American Herbalist Guild, she teaches herbalism and druidism in the United States and in Europe. She's the author of a number of books and videos on herbcraft and druid wisdom, and she lives in the New England area, and you can check her out at her website, and that's EllenEverettHopman.com. Let me spell that for you. EllenEverettHopman.com. Welcome, Ellen.
Well, hello, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so great to have you. Now, your wonderful book, The Sacred Herbs of Spring, you've written so many. Guys, if you go to her website and you look on the first page, this woman's been busy. She's a prolific author. But why this book, and why release it now in this interesting time of COVID-19?
Well, it's actually a companion volume. I had a book that came out last year, this past Halloween, actually, called The Sacred Herbs of Samhain. Samhain is the old Celtic name for Halloween. And this is kind of the companion volume.
Okay.
So Samhain is for herbs to contact the ancestors and the dead and how to protect your house and how to open your third eye, all that kind of stuff. And then Sacred Herbs of Spring is for May Day, Beltane. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that in the ancient Celtic calendar, the 2 most important festivals of the year were Samhain or Halloween, we still remember that one, and mm-hmm. Beltane or May Day, which our culture has just about forgotten.
Yeah.
The reason is that Samhain or Halloween marks the passage from summer into winter, and Beltane or May Day marks the passage from winter into summer. And they only had 2 seasons. They had summer and winter. That was it, the dark half of the year and the light half of the year. And, you know, we still remember, our culture still remembers that Halloween is a spirit night. There's ghosts around and, you know, the walls between the worlds are thin and all that. But May Day is actually the same thing. Because it's a time of chaos, change, dissolution. You're moving from one mode of existence, you know, winter when you have to wrap up and wear lots of layers and keep yourself warm. You're moving into a different way of being, which is in the summer. And so that's also a spirit night. So if you want to contact fairies or work with your psychic intuition or, you know, do astral travel or anything like that, May Day is a really good time to do it, at just like Halloween or Samhain.
Okay. So if, for whatever reason, you miss May Day, you miss Beltane, can you still utilize the information in your book for other days?
Oh, of course. Yeah, you can. It's just that there are certain times when there's energy, you know, there's an energy. Exactly. They're both portals. You open the portal, and it's just easier to do it at Halloween and May Day. It's going to be easier. You can go out and work with, I mean, any time in the spring is very powerful because the sap is rising and the energies are emerging, you know, they're moving from the ground up. So any kind of manifestation that you want to do in the dark half, Samhain, and the dark half of the year, the energy is going down. It's rooting. It's going into the dark. So that's the time for dreaming and manifesting that way. But in the light half of the year, any time in the light half of the year, the energy is rising. It's coming up. So it's the time to manifest physical projects and go out and, you know, actually do things with your hands and create things that way. So, I mean, there are always good times. There's always good times for manifesting. But when you're working with nature, if you're in sync with what's happening in nature, then you have all of that energy, the natural forces working with you. That's why people, you know, do things at the full moon, because there's a lot of energy around at the full moon.
The new moon, too, even though it's dark.
And then the new moon, it's beginning. You know, it's the new beginning is the new moon. But then you get the ripe full moon, and everything is juicy.
Love it. So is Beltane making a comeback here in the United States? I know among the, you know, the Druids and the Wiccans, they tend to celebrate it. But what about the general population? Are they opening up to it, or do you feel that it's still somewhat of a closed door?
I don't get the sense that the average American is tuned in to May Day, and that's actually deliberate, and it's very sad. I'm old enough to remember when I was very small, when I was like 5 years old, 5 or 6 years old, we still celebrated May Day at my public school. We were told to make May baskets, which we made out of paper, and then we made little paper flowers, and we put them in our May basket, and we were instructed, because believe it or not, I was walking to school and back every day by myself, and nobody thought that was strange. It was a very different world, you know. But we were told to hang the May basket on somebody's doorknob. So all the kids would fan out into the neighborhood, and on our way home, we hung the basket on somebody's doorknob. But what happened was in the McCarthy era, in the 1950s, the American government was, you know, during World War II, Russia was our ally, but after that, they became our enemy during the McCarthy era. And the Russians always had this big military parade on May 1st. That was their big May Day parade thing. Yeah, and so our government decided to censor May Day. That's what happened. And then after that, you couldn't bring it up. You couldn't mention it in schools. You couldn't teach about it. It was just silenced. That's why we still have Halloween, but we've forgotten May Day. So among, you know, traditional people who have English ancestry, at least in my area, I live in New England. In my area, a lot of people put up maypoles, and the Morris dancers come out, you know, but that's very English. That's only for people that have English ancestry, and they're very consciously trying to keep that going. But among pagans, you know, as you said, Druids, witches, Wiccans, mm-hmm. people like that, mm-hmm. we always celebrate May Day because we understand the importance of it.
Yeah, you know, I think that we've gotten away from honoring Earth. And I think with this COVID-19 that's running around right now, it might be giving us a message. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm horrified at the number of deaths. We're at the same level now that we were after 10 years of the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. That's how many people have died as of today, which is end of April. It's only been a few months, and we've lost as many people in 3 months as we lost in 10 years during Vietnam. So that's horrible. But at the same time, there are wonderful things going on. And that's what I generally try to focus on, is the positive, you know, because humans are not the only beings on the planet. The animals are getting a break, mm-hmm. and I've already experienced that myself. I've lived in this house for over 30 years. I live in the country. I live in the woods. Mm-hmm. And I have never had deer in my yard. I have had the occasional moose. I've mm-hmm. had bears.
Oh.
But I've never had deer in my yard. And mm-hmm. just in the last few weeks, for the first time ever, I went out at night. I do that every night just to look at the stars. And there were deer. And I'd never seen that before.
Wow.
And you know, there are these wonderful videos that you can see now, like on Facebook and YouTube, and animals that are coming out, you know, sheep wandering around the roads, and whales and elephants emerging in India and walking through the city, and, you know, it's happening all over. The animals are coming out, and they've always been there. They've just been hiding, you know, mm-hmm. and finally, the animals are getting a chance. And then I noticed this before I saw any of the photographs. There's photographs now of cities, you know, like Los Angeles, Mumbai, India, even in the Himalayas. There's photographs now showing landscapes that were invisible for the last 30 years because of smog and mm-hmm. air pollution. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you can see them. And I noticed that. I was taking a walk in the Quabbin, which is a wilderness area near here. And I looked up at the sky one day, and I was mystified because it was like blueberry blue.
Like, what's that?
And I hadn't seen it. I'd never seen it looking like that. And I looked up, and I said, something is going on here. And it was just... It was like this deep, almost indigo blue, and that was in the middle of the day because
wow.
there was no dust, there was no pollution, there was no, you know, smog going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's wonderful things going on for the air. There's wonderful things going on for the water. The waters are clearing, you know, because the beaches are empty. The turtles they're going to have a record year for leatherback turtles to come and have nests and have babies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the only question now is, how do we keep this up? And I've been thinking about that a lot. And I think as a culture, first of all, we need to buy less stuff.
Yeah.
If we can just do that, that would be a big deal. And then people are figuring out how to work at home now. So if more people worked at home and they didn't commute every day, that would mean less cars on the road, less pollution, less use of trains and buses and everything. If people can just learn to stay home and treat their home like a castle, you know, make it beautiful,
yeah.
make it tend your garden, have a beautiful garden, you know, all those, pay attention to the home rather than running off to the mall or whatever it is people do. Pay attention to your space and
mm-hmm.
also your inner space, you know, meditate. And
mm-hmm.
we could change our society, and then the
mm-hmm.
animals would have a break. You know,
I agree with you, but well, I'm going to say this to that is, and I'm not religious, so those of you who are, I respect you and you can go your own path, but it's like organized religion doesn't want any of what you just said to happen. It's like they don't want you to go in and within and discover yourself. They don't want you to necessarily take that time and be at peace. You know, it's all about worshiping the building. I mean, this last Easter, during this virus, people opened up the churches for Easter. I mean, you know, come on, folks. You go to church once a year, Easter, and you couldn't miss it this year? I don't know. It just blows my mind. It truly does. But
Barbara, the Pope Francis honored it. Pope Francis didn't allow people to go to church.
Yeah, but those Southern fundamentalists.
Right. Well, but you know, there are religious people that actually have a, you know, conscience, and they were more interested in protecting life, actual protecting life, than they were in whatever it is they're doing. We have free will. We can make our own decisions. Remember that Jesus said, "Whatever I do, you can do also."
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, he was saying that you are also a child of God,
mm-hmm.
or the goddess, just like him. You know, mm-hmm. that's what he was saying. And, you know, the churches, I mean, it's weird, even among Druids, when Druids write prayers, I notice the kind of prayers that they write, because you can tell mm-hmm. who was brought up Catholic, who was brought up Baptist, you know, by mm-hmm. the kind of prayers they write.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the Catholic Druids, ex-Catholic Druids, writing things like, "Oh, God and Goddess, forgive me, I have been so bad."
I almost hit her. Oh, my goodness.
I'm a sinner, exactly. And I go, why are you doing this? You know, but it was drummed into them at an early age. So I think we all need to be aware of what we were raised with, and maybe even go back and reread the Bible. You might be surprised.
I'm going to skip that one, but, you know, y'all can go on and do that. Well, folks, we're speaking with Ellen Everett Hopman. We're talking about her book, The Sacred Herbs of Spring, Magical Healing and Edible Plants to Celebrate Beltane. You know, what caught my attention in your books right off, Ellen, was you talking about fairies, and you talked about fairies in general, then fairy magicians and fairy doctors. Could you share some of that, whatever you want to share around that with us?
Well, in the book, I do focus on fairy lore associated with Beltane or May Day.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, you know, as I said, this is a really good time to be in touch with the spirits, because we're in a liminal time, and the walls between the worlds are thin. So I just have a few little suggestions. One is to hang out with oak trees. There's an old expression, fairy folks live in old oaks. They say that every old oak tree holds hundreds of fairies.
Really?
And so if you want to make them happy, and the first thing I did when I moved out here, I actually did this, I found some blue crystals. They love the color blue. That's their favorite. They love blue. So I put a ring. I have a natural stone circle out back. So I put a ring. I buried a ring of blue crystals around the circle. The circle is surrounded by oak trees. And that was for the fairies. That wasn't for me, because they were buried. After that, I couldn't see them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do that around an old oak tree. And you can also plant flowers around an old oak tree just for them. And they love that. And one of their favorite flowers is the primrose. And that's very English, the primrose. Of course, they have them in Ireland also. But there's a tradition of scattering primrose flowers or placing primroses in front of the door. Not in the house, but in front of the door. And I thought about that. I love to read about these old traditions and then think about them. And I realized that what was happening is there are these very mischievous fairies that are around at May Day, which is why there's very strong prohibitions against bringing branches of blooming hawthorn into the house, for example. It's not really May Day officially until the hawthorn blooms, but you're never supposed to bring the blooms into the house. You can use them to decorate your maypole, but you do not bring them into the house, because they say if you do that, these mischievous fairies will come in and then they cause all kinds of trouble. So the other tradition is you put the primroses in front of the door. Well, I figured out it's because the fairies love the primroses. They love them so much that if you put them in front of the door, it kind of acts as a barrier. So they'll get totally wrapped up in the primroses, and they'll just hang out there, and they won't come in the house. That's the idea.
Okay, cool.
Well, they say that if you scatter them at your entrance, the fairies will bless the house. So what does that mean? Why would they bless the house? It's because they know that you like their favorite flowers. Mm-hmm. You can also hang them on the door. If you want to prevent the fairies from stealing your butter, you put the primroses somewhere around the butter churn, you know, so that they're more interested in the primroses and they don't steal your butter. And you can also eat them in salads, by the way. And if you do stumble across a large patch, and I've seen this in Ireland, I was on some land in May a couple of years ago that was just, there were primroses everywhere. If you see that, if you see a lot of primroses on a piece of land, that means that there's an entrance to the land of fairy somewhere near there, because that's exactly the kind of place that they're going to be attracted to.
Oh, okay.
And then ferns. I have lots of, if you walk behind the house, it's just ferns everywhere. Thick, lush ferns, and they say that where the ferns are thick, again, there's an entrance to fairy somewhere nearby. So what you're supposed to do is on May Eve, or Walpurgisnacht in German, on May Eve, and also at Samhain, same thing, Halloween, you're supposed to stake out a particularly thick stand of fern and watch it. And if you see the ferns parting, that means that the fairies are emerging. They're leaving house at that time.
Okay, but they would be emerging in a good way, right? Not the mischievous ones.
No, the mischievous ones are you don't want them in the house. I mean, fairies,
okay.
We've been kind of brainwashed by Disney to think of fairies as like little Tinkerbell creatures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the way they look. That's not the way the Celts understood them. They come in many different sizes. I've seen green, they call them the children, about 3 feet high, green creatures. They look like ETs, only they're green.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people see fairies that are dressed, usually in old-fashioned clothing, and they're also quite small, about 2-3 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a whole other level called the gentry, and they're the same size as humans, and they ride on beautiful horses. And if you want to see them, the thing to do on around May Day, especially May Eve, is to find a blooming tree, like a blooming apple tree or a blooming elder or a blooming hawthorn, any blooming tree, because the fairies will always be drawn to that. And you sleep under it on May Eve, and then that's when you see fairies, and chances are you'll see the gentry coming by. And then, I mean, there's just many, many different kinds. There are other ones that Sasquatches, they look like Sasquatches. They're giant, hairy. They travel with the cows, or they travel with the deer. And that's why nobody's ever going to find a Sasquatch. People will see them, but they will never find them, because it's a type of fairy, and they live in a different dimension. So you might think you're seeing one, but you won't be able to touch it, you know. And then you have trolls, and, you know, there's just many, many layers. There's ones that live in the water, you know, so there's just, you know, be aware that once you open yourself to that realm, it's just a whole other thing.
Wow, it's really fascinating. Now, you also talk in the book about helpful spirits. What are those, and give us an example of one?
Well, those are things like the brownies, the boonies, that live in the house, you know. They actually help you, And you should have a relationship with your household spirits. And so everybody needs to have a place for them in the house. And I like to have a place in the house and also a place in the garden. I always have both. So you make little offerings to them. Whenever you have a party or a celebration of some kind, you make a plate of food for them. And just, you know, you have a special corner of the house that's just for them. Make sure they know that it's just for them. You could put plants there, but no human should hang out there. And in Scotland, they have this tradition. It's called the Good Man's Croft, which is the same idea, only it's outside. Whenever you have a field or a garden, you should always have one corner that is wild, and it's kept for the good man. The good man is the fairy. And that's another one. I thought about that a lot. I thought, why, and especially, you know, hundreds of years ago, why would they keep a corner of the field wild when they were trying really hard to grow food, you know, just to feed themselves? Why would they do that? And then I kept thinking about this. There are insects and animals that won't survive unless they have weeds, you know, indigenous weeds. So now we're at a time where the bees are in trouble and all the pollinators are in trouble and the birds are in trouble. They need wild, native plants more than ever. So now we really need to do this. Just if you have a garden, make sure that you have a place where no human ever goes and you only have native weeds. Like right now, the dandelions, for example, I don't know what's going on in California, but we're just starting to get dandelions. And dandelions are so important. They're the first food for the bees. So on golf courses, you know, and lawns, people get their Roundup and their poisons and they try to get rid of the dandelions, which is the worst thing you can do. The dandelions should be left to bloom. Every part of the plant is useful. You can make medicine out of the leaves, the roots. You can eat the flowers. You can make wine out of the flowers. It's just a very useful plant, and the bees desperately need them when they first come out, when they emerge, you know, after their winter hibernation. They need them.
Okay, and folks, we do need the bees, so it's a point well taken. Ellen, talk to us about the foods that are appropriate around the celebration of May Day.
In the book I have a whole chapter on foods. What I tried to do was, in the book, whenever I list an herb, I talk about the magical uses, I talk about the medicinal uses, and then I have a dish that goes with it. For example, for nettles, I have nettle soup in here, and I have dandelion soup. I'm looking through. For lemon balm, I have fish with lemon balm butter. Rosemary, I have roasted spring lamb with rosemary. I have cooked burdock stems, linden blossom cake. Basically, it's about working with the things that are blooming. I have a whole section on flowers, edible flowers, you know, but just work with what's blooming in the landscape around May Day in your area. You know, work with local things, whatever it is. It could be the new growth coming out on the hemlock trees. You know, that's one of my favorite things. Just keep your eye out. Learn to pay attention to what's going on in your area and celebrate it. You know, I don't know. You probably have strawberries by now, do you, in your area?
They're starting.
Yeah, we're nowhere near that. But, you know, in Germany, strawberries come out in May. And so they have May wine, which is with sweet woodruff and strawberries, you know, in the glass. And I talk about that. I give a couple of different recipes for that. But basically, it's about celebrating what's happening in your area, which is going to be very different in New England from Arizona,
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because in this time of this virus, we're basically coming back to shopping and buying and doing everything locally because, like, the big meat plants are shutting down for various reasons. They're having trouble getting vegetables across country. So it's like it's naturally occurring now.
Well, see, that's just another one of the very positive things that's happening. At the same time that we have this horrible, it's like instant karma, you know, we have terrible stuff going on, but we have an equal amount of really good stuff going on. And if people went back to eating what's native to their area, what's local to their area, and if they're going to eat something like strawberries from New Zealand, something like that, then they should be horribly expensive. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be something that you can just walk into your supermarket 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and get grapes from Chile and strawberries from New Zealand and lamb, you know, from England. I mean, that's nuts. You know, that's got to stop. And things from far away need to be priced accordingly. Support your local farmers and learn to wildcraft. But there's rules to that, too. Don't just go out and grab everything. You know, only pick the things that grow in great profusion that are native to your area, you know, where there's a lot of it. And remember that the animals need it, the bees need it, the birds need it, you know.
Yeah, we all need it. It's a share likes type of scenario. Let me ask you a question, switching gears a little bit. What is a druid? You're a druid priestess. So tell us about, you know, because I'm really not clear, to be honest with you. So talk to us about what it is to be a druid and then a druid priestess, please.
Well, there's many different kinds of druids. So, of course, if you ask, you know, if you ask three druids what is a druid, you're going to get 10 different answers. But my particular kind of druid, my group is called Tribe of the Oak, and you can find us at tribeoftheoak.com, and we have members all over the world. We teach people online, which is very useful at this time. We have people in Ireland and Mexico and all across the U.S. and South Africa. And we also do ceremonies online, which is really great because that's the only way we meet. And actually, if anyone is interested, if you message me at tribeoftheoak.com, if you're interested in taking part, on May 2nd, we're going to do our Beltane online. But you have to be, you know, I would have to sign you into the group.
Mm-hmm.
But our group is very focused on ancient Irish wisdom teachings. And the reason we picked the Irish tradition is because the oldest wisdom texts that we have, older than the English, older than the Welsh even, are the Irish texts. And that's because when the missionaries came in, the monks, and they collected the stories, and that, thank goodness they did that. You know, we know about the gods and goddesses and the old stories because they did write these things down. That's the closest to the old druids that you can come, is the old Irish material. And so in our training, we require people to read a lot of books, and then we study the wisdom texts. And to be a druid, back in the ancient times, you had to study for 20 years to be a druid. So for us, it's not a question of saying, oh, you know, I have an Irish grandmother, I want to be a druid, or I love trees, I'm a druid. You know, you do hear that, but that's not the way we see it. We have real training. We want people to learn the ancient traditions and also understand the archaeology and the anthropology and the mythology and, you know, all the lore that's been accumulated for 2,000 years, not all of it, but, you know, as much as you can, and the old tribal laws, things like that, the real stuff, the old stuff that we still have that's been handed down, that's our focus. So we're called Celtic Reconstructionists, Celtic Reconstructionist Druids, with an Irish focus. You know, which is different from other druids or more English focused. You know, that's not what we're not that way. But we have a very nice private Facebook group, which again, you have to be invited to. But we have people all over the world, and if anyone's interested, they should contact us.
Okay, and that's through your website, thetribeoftheoak.com, right?
Yeah, tribeoftheoak.com.
Okay,
correct.
Great. Now, when we go to Alan Everett Hopman, what are we going to find there? I mean, girl, you've got so much up here, it would take me 6 years to read it. So, and that's good because you got good information. So tell us about it when we go to your website.
Okay, so my website, EllenEverettHopman.com, I have all my books there. They are for sale. If you want a signed copy of a book with a personal note, you can order it from me. I also have a collection of, well, I write a blog every month, and then I have a collection of articles. So there's fairy lore in there, there's herb lore, there's a lot of archaeology. It's all Celtic news. There's some politics and ethics. But, yeah, you'll find a lot of stuff. But you can sign up to get my blog delivered, you know, RSS feed, or you can just go to the site and see it there with all the different kinds of information. And, again, I have a guest book. You can message me that way. I'm also on Facebook. Mm-hmm. You can find my author page.
Okay, so girl, she's findable, folks. She's findable. So yeah. Remember that name.
I can be found.
Yes, Ellen Everett Hopman. Now, do you work with people one-on-one in your area?
Well, that's kind of difficult right now.
Yeah, it is. I thought about that as soon as I said it.
Yeah, I mean, for over 30 years, I've taught herb classes in my house, and I've also, for 30 years, I had druids come here in the summer for a camp, but that's not happening.
It'll be virtual this year, that's all. I'm actually attending a virtual class reunion tomorrow. So, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay,
yeah,
good.
We're
doing ceremonies online, which I didn't think would be very effective, but it turns out it's extremely effective. We have a very talented chief bard, and she writes original poetry for every ceremony that we do. We have brand new original poetry. We also have amazing music, and, you know, music really brings the emotions. So between the poetry and the music, it ends up being very powerful. We do a divination. And because we have people in South Africa, for them, it's Samhain now. It's not Beltane. It's Halloween for them. So part of the ceremony is for Beltane, and part of the ceremony will be for Samhain for them. But, yeah, it ends up being quite powerful. And the rituals take about 2 hours. Again, if anyone's interested, you can message me and I can direct you to the place.
Okay. Okay, that'll be cool. You've got so much information to share. But our time is almost up. It's like, oh my goodness, it went so fast. What pearl of wisdom would you like to leave with our audience today?
Oh boy, just think about the earth, the water, the air, and think about the animals. And every time a wave of fear or panic or, you know, sadness comes over you, because we are living through this is a genuinely historic disaster that we're living through, but when you feel like you're going to be overwhelmed, just remember the whole rest of life. It's not just about humans, you know. There's a lot of other beings on this planet, and they deserve to have space, and this whole episode is good for them. So it's going to be really rough for us for a while, but we need to relearn how to live, because, you know, we have to clean up the climate, and one of the best ways we can do that is to stay home. So we weren't smart enough to figure that out, so nature is making sure that we do she's kind of forcing us, like, you know, okay, you want to learn the hard way, here you go.
Yeah. She definitely gave us the boulder because we didn't pay attention to the 2x4 that clocked us upside her head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you take the eagle eye view, if you take the long view of what's going on, I think ultimately it's positive. And then the other thing is, as far as society as a whole, every time we have a big disaster, whether it was the Depression, World War II, all these things, afterwards society became more tolerant, more egalitarian. That always happens, you know. And maybe we'll get better health care after this. Who knows? Maybe we'll have less income inequality. Because all these things are being brought up. They're all being exposed to the light. Mm-hmm. And you know, so that's a good thing. It's like ripping a Band-Aid off a wound. The wound was there. It was festering, but it was hidden. Now it's exposed. So what are we going to do, you know? I think ultimately it's going to be good.
I think so, too. You know, we just got to get through it. And patience, folks, patience. You know, you can't stay in the house for a week. I've been in for over a month, you know, and it's just the way it is because I'm going to live. I'm old, and I want to live. So, folks, you know, just take care of you. But, Ellen, thank you so much for being my guest today. I truly appreciate it. I appreciate your time and attention. And to the audience, thank you for listening. And I want you guys to remember that the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of loving self and earth. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Agape.